Welcome back to Coastal Connection. I'm Brian Russo. We've been looking back at some of our favorite profile pieces of the past year, and coming up in just a bit, we'll bring you the best of the Elsie Diaries, our around-the-world audio sailing journey with the Johnson family of Oxford, Maryland. But first, we bring you another conversation from our side gig series. And the man we'll meet next divides his time between two radically different worlds.
This is called a casino shuffle. This is called, I don't know why actually, but it's called a Hindu shuffle. This is an overhand shuffle. And this is the very difficult backwards overhand shuffle.
Rich Block is a magician and a performer who's been entertaining audiences ever since he was 7 years old. He's done shows all over the world, including at the Dickens Parlor Theater, the venue he opened a few years ago in Millville, Delaware. But Rich Block is also an attorney, a D.C. arbitrator who works through major legal disputes in the nation's capital. So we sat on the stage of the Dickens Parlor Theater, poured a cup of espresso, and he pulled out a deck of cards. Because a chat with a magician has to start with a trick.
But my hands are like trained pieces of... Okay, wait a minute. There seems to be error crept into this. Hang on one second. I'm trying to get all these in the original state, just as we had them before. You have any questions so far?
No.
Good. I'm trying to put these back in perfect order, even though it looks like it's... some are face up, some are face down. Some are back to back and belly to belly. This is, let's try this. If I shuffle them something like that, we'll find that some are face up, some are face down. So it's not perfect yet, but I'm going to get there. I'll take these and, okay, see, I know that this card is supposed to be right there. Okay, good. And then we can just shuffle these in here. That, and we're getting near, all right, good. I have done it. I have put this deck back in perfect order.
It looks like the way I would pick up a deck of cards that were just strewn about on the ground.
Exactly. I don't claim any particular skill here, as you can see. But what I have done with a magic gesture, that's a magic gesture that I've just done there, I've caused all the cards to be back in the perfect order, including your phone number. And to prove that to you, I've made your phone numbers the only cards in the deck that are face up. Remind me again of the area code.
7. 2-4. Wow.
2-4. Yes, the next 3.
3-5-3.
I feel a 3 coming on.
Wow.
3-5.
Wow.
3. What are the last 4 numbers?
2-2-1-6.
2-2-1-6.
Wow. That's really impressive. How long did it take you to learn a trick like that?
About 2 years.
Man.
It's a lot of muscle memory and a good bit of sleight of hand.
This theater, for anyone who's not been here before, it's a hidden gem of this area. It is completely fascinating. Every little idiosyncrasy has been thought of. It is the definition of charming. Tell me about the journey in not only finding this place in Millville, Delaware, but putting it all together.
It was a kind of a long-held goal of mine to do something like this. I'd been traveling for many years as a traveling magician. What kind of magician is not a traveling magician? And I had done a lot of work on cruise ships and corporate things and getting on the airplane and heading toward Vegas or wherever else I was able to pick up the phone. And after some point, it occurred to us that it might be nice, I say us, my wife and myself, that it might be nice to have folks come to us instead. And so... We've loved this area for many years, and we've looked around for a long time as to a place that somehow we could set down and take root. And it wasn't easy. I made a lot of false starts, and then somewhere around 2009, we saw the property where we're now sitting, and it occurred to me that this might work. We're right here on Route 26. It's a big commercial area, but it's also kind of a wooded environment. And so we bought the land here. All that was on it at the time was a four-bedroom house and a big garage and a little cottage. And that, I thought at the time, wasn't going to do anything for us. One day as I was walking through the garage, literally trying to figure out if I could tear it down myself without retaining someone who actually knew what they were doing, I looked up and around, and the ceilings were 17 feet high, and there was a little, the gentleman who owned it had a little workshop in the rear of the garage where he did furniture refinishing, and that was raised up on a concrete slab. And as I looked at it, it occurred to me, hey, you know, that could be a stage. and so I figured, well, why don't we just try and make a little something out of it, and we'll do a few shows here, and then over the years, maybe we'll figure out what we're going to really do. So we built risers, and we bought a bunch of seats off eBay and from a high school auditorium and put those in. And little by little, it actually started to look like a theater. And there was really one day when I was sitting in the seats and looking up toward what was going to be the stage, we were putting up the proscenium that goes up around here, and I actually got a chill. I said, my God, this is going to be a stage, and there's going to be entrances and exits, and there's going to be theater in here. Yeah. And that, I think, was the point where I really decided to go whole hog. And I had done a lot of work in London over the several years preceding that, and I had accumulated a whole bunch of Victorian prints and posters and things like that. At the time, I didn't quite know why, but so all of a sudden we started using these items to decorate, and this turned into a very much of a Victorian atmosphere. Mm-hmm. From there, the step was pretty direct toward having it become Charles Dickens' parlor.
Yeah,
because Dickens himself, aside from being a world-changing author, was a pretty good amateur magician.
Really?
Yeah, he used to entertain folks in his parlor, friends and associates. And
So being a magician was essentially his side gig, just like, you know, being a magician is your side gig as you're an arbitrator. Yes. in Washington, D.C. Tell me about the first year of this place and getting people around this area to really buy into the type of performances that were here. Because now, I mean, this place is filled to capacity pretty much every night in the summer. But tell me about that first year.
It was, as you might expect, a leap of faith. I distinctly remember evenings when our manager, Cheryl Dubois, is just a wonder woman, and she came running in one night and said, "We have 11 people tonight," and I was thrilled. I said, "I couldn't believe it. This was like Yankee Stadium happening right here." And so there were, you know, getting the word out on two levels. This has always been a major effort because people hear magic and they say, "Oh, I can't wait to bring my grandchildren down." When in fact, this is not that. We have a pretty aggressive children's program. We have matinees every Saturday for kids. But the shows in the evenings are sophisticated, kind of funny entertainment. And the people, I put the arm on every magician I've associated with over the last 45 years. And they have been incredibly generous in coming, working here for fees that are considerably lower than what they could do in a real gig.
Right.
But these people are really great entertainers, and the shows are aimed toward sophisticated adult audiences. It's not that there's anything inappropriate for children, it's just that the adults are the ones that we want to be here in the evenings and bringing their families with them as well.
Sure. Let's talk a little bit about your personal journey into the world of magic. You know, I mentioned that you're an arbitrator in Washington, but your history with magic and being a magician started at a very early age, and it actually, that story includes the great Abbot in Costello. Tell me that story.
I was 3 years old, and my father had passed away. My mom took me out to the West Coast just for a change of pace and scenery. We had relatives out there. And one day, they took me to the Abbott and Costello radio show somewhere in Hollywood. During the show, Lou Costello came down into the audience looking for someone to bring up onto the stage. And he chose me, this little three-year-old kid. I really don't remember what I did up there. But after the show, he came to my mother and made her an offer. He said that they wanted to keep me in Hollywood and send me to the various schools out there for actors, and they would underwrite the whole experience. And they apparently, it was a pretty extraordinary offer. And my mom thought it over for about a minute or two and flatly rejected it and whisked me out of there to get me away from those show people and take me back east.
Right.
So that was my brush with early stardom.
What was the moment that you remember where you thought, this is something that I have to do?
That was a more definable moment. It happened when I was 7. My mother was on the road as a traveling sales lady, and I was living with my aunt and uncle a great deal of the time. And they were pretty laissez-faire about just letting me go out and wander and have a good time, and I did. This was in East Orange, New Jersey, and I went over, and there was a magic shop at the end of the street. And I walked in, and there was a guy there doing miracles, and I was absolutely smitten. And I walked up to him, I watched him, I just stood there in awe, and I said to him, I want to work here, you need to hire me. And he said, what's your experience? And I responded something like, experience, I'm 7. I really wanted to be there. And so I just lied to him. I said, look, I don't have any experience, but my father is a great magician. And I had seen a magician the year before in first grade. And I didn't remember him, but I remembered his name for some reason. The name was Ted Collins. And I said to this guy, my father is Ted Collins. And he was very impressed. And he said, well, if your dad is Ted Collins, you can work here. Come in and after school and on the weekends, and I'll teach you the art. And I was thrilled. And as I walked out of the shop, I turned to him. I said, I don't know your name. He said, it's Ted Collins. It's a true story. And I worked there for 8 or 9 years, and it was heaven. And the magicians that were coming in to play New York, or the Catskills or the Poconos or whatever, in those days, magic shops were a real center of the magic community. And whatever town you're in, you'd be sure to go to the local shop. That's not the case now. There are just very few of them.
Right.
The internet has changed everything.
Sure.
But they used to come in, and they used to teach the little kid this and that, and I was just in an idyllic surrounding.
Let's talk a little bit about your main gig, your job as an arbitrator. You look at these two professions and passions, and they couldn't be more different. Tell me what it is about each that drive you forward every day.
They are different. They are dramatically different, and it is that provides the intrigue for me. This whole process of doing these two disciplines means that I, in essence, can walk through a door and close that door and be in one world and not the other. And I've made it a very distinct choice over the years, and it's been 40-some-odd years now, not to mix them at all. And I think by adopting that, what happens is that I get into the one world or the other, and I love them both profoundly. They have both real draws for me, but they're different. I mean, the law, on the one hand, I've always thought, in its essence, is something that helps to move people forward by quelling passions and getting rules by which we can continue to exist as a society. Magic, on the other hand, is there pretty much to inspire those passions.
When you're putting these magic tricks together, where do you start without, you know, giving away the ending and the trick of it? But how do you even conceptualize how the trick is going to be and how it's going to be performed?
Basically, there are two ways. The first is where you sit and you ask the same question that anyone in theater asks, be it a writer or an actor or a musician. The question is, what if? And that's the key to the step forward in someone's creative imagination. You say, you know, what are the outer limits of something happening? And whether that's transformed into a play or a magic effect, it's the same creative process. The other way for magicians is terrific, and that is you're walking through a hardware store and you see some gizmo on the shelf, and it may be, you know, it's meant to open cans, but you say, oh, wait a minute, I could just bend that a little bit and have a miracle.
Wow.
And that's great fun.
After being in this business for, you know, the better part of four decades, is there any trick that you see in the circuit or somebody coming through this theater that wows you?
You know, it's part of both the joy and the curse of being in the business, and that is, the curse is that you have pretty much seen it all, and you do know most of the techniques and the secrets. And the reason that's a curse is because I know it's true for me, and I think it's probably true for every magician that I know. We are there because we really want there to be somewhere magic. We want that to happen. And if we can get as close to that as possible, well, the closer we get, the happier we are. But if you're around a long time, those opportunities are very rare because you know, you sit and you see and you say, well, that was very well done, and you know exactly, and there's no fantasy. Yeah. But that said, there are moments, and I love it when I'll see somebody do something, and either I say, that was an extraordinary thought, and maybe I know exactly what they did, but I'm still an enormous fan over the imagination that it took to get to where they are,
right.
Or, as not as frequently, but it still happens, I am toasted. I have no idea how they did that, and I couldn't be more delighted.
Rich Block, thank you so much for your time, and best of luck.
Pleasure. Thank you, Brian.
To learn more about Rich Block or the Dickens Parlor Theater here in Millville, Delaware, click to our website, wamucoast.org. You're listening to Coastal Connection. We're on 88.3 in Ocean City, Maryland, and 88.5 in Washington. I'm Brian Russo.